Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Destiny's Way, by Walter John Williams. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. As Leia sat in the chair that was hers by right of death, she raised her eyes to the cold, faraway stars. Checklists buzzed distantly in her mind, and her hands moved over the controls. But her thoughts flew elsewhere, amid the chill infinitude. Searching. Nothing. Her gaze fell, and there she saw on the controls of the adjacent pilot seat, her husband's hands. She drew comfort from the sight, from the sureness and power she knew was there in those strong hands. Her heart leapt. Something, somewhere in all those stars had touched her. She thought, Jason. Her husband's hands touched controls and the stars streamed away, turned to bleeding smears of light as if seen through beaten rain, and the distant touch vanished. Jason, she said. And then, at her husband's startled look, at the surprise and pain in his brown eyes. Jason. And you're sure? Han Solo said. You're sure it was Jason?
Yes, reaching out to me. I felt him. It could have been no one else.
And he's alive.
Yes.
Leia Organa Solo could read him so well. She knew that Han believed their son dead, but that he tried, for her sake, to pretend otherwise.
It was Jason, she said. He was reaching out to me through the Force. I felt him. He wanted to tell me he was alive and with friends.
She reached over and took his hand.
Our son is alive, and so are we. Be joyful. Be at peace. Everything changes from now on.
The idol lasted until Han and Leia walked hand in hand into the Millennium Falcon's main hold. Through the touch, Leia felt the slight tension of Han's muscles as he came in sight of their guest, an Imperial commander in immaculate dress grays. The commander rose politely to her feet. An exceptionally smooth transition into hyperspace, Captain Solo, she said. For a ship with such heterogeneous components, such a transition speaks well of the ship's captain and his skills. Thanks, Han said. The problem with Commander Vena Dorja, Leia thought, was that she was simply too observant. She was a woman of about 30, the daughter of the captain of a Star Destroyer, with bobbed dark hair tucked neatly into her uniform cap, and the bland, pleasant face of a professional diplomat. She had been on Coruscant during its fall, allegedly negotiating some kind of commercial treaty, purchasing Ulban droid brains for use in Imperial hydroponics farms. Vena Dorja had gotten off Coruscant somehow. Leia had no doubt that her escape had been planned long in advance. And then she had turned up at Mon Calamari, the new provisional capital, blandly asking for help in returning to Imperial space, just at the moment at which Leia had been assigned a diplomatic mission to that selfsame empire. Of course, it wasn't a coincidence. Dorja was clearly a spy operating under commercial cover. But what could Leia do? The New Republic might need the help of the Empire. And the Empire might be offended if its commercial representative were needlessly delayed in her return.
Please, sit down, Leia said. Your Highness is kind, Dorja said, and lowered her stocky body into a chair. Shall we dine? Leia asked.
Dorja nodded, bland as always,
As your highness wishes. As Han sat down with his plates, C-3PO contemplated the table.
Sir, a princess and former chief of state takes precedence, of course, over both a captain and an imperial commander. But a commander, forgive me, does not take precedence over a New Republic general, even one on the inactive list. General Solo, if you would be so kind as to sit above Commander Dorja.
Han gave C-3PO a baleful look. I like it fine where I am, he said. Which was, of course, as far away from the Imperial Commander as the small table permitted.
But, sir, the rules of precedence...
I like it where I am, Han said, more firmly.
But, sir...
We'll dine informally, 3PO. C-3PO's tone allowed his disappointment to show.
Very well, Your Highness.
I thank you again for your offer of transit to the Empire. Dorja said later, after the soup course. It was fortunate that you have business there. Very fortunate, Leia agreed. Your mission to the Empire must be critical, Dorja probed. To take you from the government at such a crucial time? I'm doing what I do best, Leia said. I can't help but wonder how the old Empire would have handled the crisis, Dorja continued. I hope you will forgive my partisan attitude, but it seems to me that the Emperor would have mobilized his entire armament at the first threat and dealt with the Yuuzhan Vong in an efficient and expeditious manner through the use of overwhelming force.
That's not what the Empire would have done, Commander, Han said. What the Empire would have done was build a super-colossal Yuuzhan Vong-killing battle machine. They would have called it the Nova Colossus, or the Galaxy Destructor, or the Nostril Palpatine, or something equally grandiose. They would have spent billions of credits, employed thousands of contractors and subcontractors, and equipped it with the latest in death-dealing technology, and you know what would have happened? It wouldn't have worked. They'd forget to bolt down a metal plate over an access hatch leading to the main reactors or some other mistake, and a hotshot enemy pilot would drop a bomb down there and blow the whole thing up. Now that's what the Empire would have done.
Perhaps you're right, Dorja conceded.
You're right I'm right, Commander,
Han said, and poured himself a glass of water.
I have a few minutes only.
Senator Fior Rodan said. He sank, in an oversoft armchair while his aides bustled in and out of his hotel suite. I appreciate your taking the time to see me, Counselor, Luke Skywalker said.
At least I have managed to get the Calamarian government to give the Senate a place to meet, Rodan said. I was afraid we'd have to go on using hotel facilities.
The Senate hadn't quite shrunk to the size where it could comfortably meet in a hotel suite, but it was certainly a much slimmer body than it had been just a few months previously. Many senators had managed to find reasons not to be in the capital when the Yuuzhan Vong attacked. Others had been sent away to establish a reserve of political leaders so that they wouldn't be caught all in one place. Yet others had commandeered military units in the middle of the action and fled. Fior Rodan had done none of these things. He had remained at his post until the fall of Coruscant, then been evacuated by the military at the last moment. He joined the luckless Po in his attempt to form a government, and then come to Mon Calamari, when the Senate reconvened and summoned all senators to their places.
How may I help you, Skywalker? Rodan asked.
This morning, Luke said. You were quoted on broadcast media saying that the Jedi were an impediment to the resolution of the war.
I should say that is self-evidently true, Rodan said. The Yuuzhan Vong insist that you must all be handed over to them. That is an impediment to the war's resolution. Unless, of course, we do hand you over.
Would you do that?
If I thought that by doing so I could save the lives of billions of the New Republic citizens, I would certainly consider such an action.
Rodan frowned slightly.
But there are more serious impediments to peace now than the Jedi, such as the fact that the enemy are sitting in the ruins of our capital.
His face hardened.
I personally will not support even an attempt at peace with the Yuuzhan Vong until such time as they evacuate Coruscant and the other worlds they have seized.
His eyes flicked to Luke again.
Does that satisfy you that I'm not planning to sacrifice you and your cohort, Skywalker?
I'm pleased to know that you're not in favor of peace at any price, Luke said.
Of course, I'm only a senator and a member of the late Chief of State's advisory council, Rodan said. Once we have a new Chief of State, I will inevitably be forced to support policies with which I personally disagree.
There is talk that you may be our next Chief of State.
I would say that such talk is premature, Rodan said.
Whom do you support for the post? Luke asked.
One question after another. You sound like a political journalist.
I'm merely trying to understand the situation.
Consult the Force, Rodan said. That's what you people do, isn't it?
Senator Rodan, Luke said, may I ask what role you envision for the Jedi in this war?
Two words, Skywalker, Rodan said. None whatsoever.
The Jedi, Luke said, are the guardians of the New Republic.
Oh?
Rodan pursed his lips, glanced again at Luke.
I thought we had the New Republic Defense Force for that purpose.
There were no military in the Old Republic, Luke said. There were only the Jedi.
A half-smile twitched on Rodan's face. That proved unfortunate when Darth Vader turned up, didn't it? He said.
And in any case, the handful of Jedi you command can scarcely do the work of the thousands of Jedi Knights of the Old Republic.
Rodan's glance grew sharper.
Or do you command the Jedi? And if not you, who? And to whom is that commander responsible?
Each Jedi Knight is responsible to the Jedi Code, Luke said. Never to act for personal power, but to seek justice and enlightenment.
Noble words, Rodan said. But what does it mean in practice? For justice, we have police and the courts. But the Jedi take it upon themselves to deliver justice and are constantly interfering in police matters, often employing violence. For diplomacy, we have the highly skilled ambassadors and consuls of the Ministry of State. But Jedi, some of them mere children, I might add, take it upon themselves to conduct high-level negotiations that frequently seem to end in conflict and war. And though we have a highly skilled military, the Jedi take it upon themselves to commandeer military resources, to supplant our own officers in command of military units, to make strategic military decisions.
The situation is critical, Luke said. We're being invaded.
It would be interesting to conduct a cost-benefit analysis to discover whether the Jedi are in fact worth the resources the government has devoted to you. But my point is this.
Rodan looked up at Luke from the depths of his oversoft chair, and his eyes were not soft at all.
You call yourselves protectors of the Republic. Very well. But I have looked very carefully at the constitution of our government. And there is no office of the protectors of the Republic.
Rodan's expression turned quizzical.
What exactly are you, Skywalker? You aren't military, we have a military. You aren't a diplomat, we have diplomats. You aren't a peace officer or a judge, we have those. So why exactly do we need you?
Jedi Knights, Luke said, have been fighting the Yuuzhan Vong from the first day of this invasion, from the first hour. We are effective enough that the Yuuzhan Vong have singled us out for persecution. They are afraid of us.
I don't question your bravery or your dedication, Rodan said.
but I do question your effectiveness. If your people want to fight the Yuuzhan Vong, why not join the defense force?
If you feel the Jedi are an undisciplined, uncontrolled force, Luke asked, why do you oppose the reformation of the Jedi Council?
Because the Jedi Council would form an elite group within the government. You say you do not seek power or personal gain, and I will take you at your word. But other Jedi have shown less admirable traits. His eyes flicked to Luke again, a chill, flinty gaze. Your father, for one.
Now, Rodan's voice became abstracted. I have many other appointments, Skywalker. I believe our interview is at an end.
Why is he behaving this way? Luke wondered. And then he left.
Luke had found Mara waiting for him as he returned to their rooms in the large hotel suite they shared with Han and Leia.
We've lost Coruscant, he said. We're fighting the enemy every day, and the squabbling and fights for precedence never end. Rodan's not going to make it easy for us. He thinks the Jedi are claiming unjustified privileges and can evolve into a menace to the state. He hesitated. And the problem is, I'm beginning to think that much of what he says might be true.
Mara turned to Luke and sighed.
It was work, but I think Trebek and I finally convinced Cal Omos that he needs to be our next chief of state.
Cal Omos had fought with the Rebel Alliance and had shown himself sympathetic to the Jedi. Certainly from the Jedi point of view, he was a better candidate for chief of state than Fior Rodan.
There are two more candidates, Mara said. Senator Kola Quis announced his intention to run this morning, after you left.
Luke searched his memory.
I never heard of him.
A Twi'lek from Ryloth, serves in the Commerce Council.
And the fourth?
Talam Ranth of the Justice Council. He's known to be canvassing for support.
The question is, Luke said, how much do we involve ourselves in this election?
As Jedi or as private citizens? Mara asked. Luke smiled.
That's a separate question.
Mara considered this.
Would it benefit Cal to be known as the Jedi's choice?
I think somebody's got to be blamed for the fall of Coruscant, Luke said. Mara nodded slowly.
So you think it's the Jedi who are going to be assigned responsibility?
I think we should take care that it's not. The question is how?
If we're seen as interfering in the selection of the chief of state, then we'll start hearing complaints of Jedi interference and Jedi power grab from Fior Rodan, if no one else.
So we act as private citizens, Mara said.
And we don't do anything Cal Omos doesn't want us to do. He's the professional. He knows just how far to push and where.
And then suddenly, Luke thought,
Jason!
A strange bliss had fallen on him.
Now everything changes, he thought. It's the turning point.
The words fell from his lips without volition, and even as he spoke, he came to the realization that he didn't know the place amid all the great stars of the universe from whence the words had come.
Jaina Solo sat alone at the controls of her ship, the tendrils of the alien hood fixed to her face. Her attention was focused on the ship's displays, where she expected her quarry to appear. Her quarry was Shimra, supreme overlord of the Yuuzhan Vong. Kill this one, she hoped, and the Yuuzhan Vong invaders might fall like a house of cards. Word had flashed from New Republic intelligence only 3 standard days earlier that the Supreme Overlord was expected at the library world of Abroa Sky. So Jaina hovered here, with the bulk of the gas giant Abroa held masking her from any detectors on the library planet, and waited to spring her trap.
Jaina badly wanted an end to the war. She had been on the front lines literally since the first day. Then she had been joyful, confident, certain of her abilities, of the power of the Force and the order of the universe. Since then, the war had taught her much. It had taught her doubt, terror, anxiety, fear and anger. She had learned the limits to the Force and to Force mastery. There was a howl from Lobaka on her comlink. The Vong had been late before, Streak.
You don't suppose that New Republic intelligence has once again drop-kicked their brains and sent us out here for nothing?
That wouldn't surprise me.
In which case, we can return to base, take a nice long rest, no?
That would surprise me. Even as Lobaka growled his impatience, Jaina sensed the distant trembling through her connection with the alien frigate. A shudder like a groundquake in the ether. Her ship's Dovin basals responding to the gravity surge that marked the arrival of a great many ships from hyperspace. Loey, she said, I think you just got your wish. She had not learned to love the captured Yuuzhan Vong frigate, Trickster, as she had her other ships. Jaina had learned her ships through her hands, by tearing them apart and putting them back together. She had learned to love every component, every servo, every power cable, every rivet. The captured ship, on the other hand, couldn't be taken apart, not without killing it. It was a single organic whole and had to be approached as such. The interface through the cognition hood was difficult. The organic ship systems were complex and frustrating. The Dovin basals used for propulsion and defense were as baffling as they were effective. Jaina named it Trickster. The name proclaimed her a manifestation of Yun Harla, the Cloaked One, the Yuuzhan Vong Trickster Goddess. As such, the name was a slap in the face to Yuuzhan Vong religious orthodoxy. Let's go, Loey. Lobaka, through his alien cognition hood, ordered Trickster to accelerate, sweeping out from behind the Obroa-held gas giant and into view of any enemy detectors. Directed gravitational energy began to throb from the Dovin basals built into the frigate. And even though some of the Dovin basals had been killed at Happy's, the huge living craft began a ferocious, smooth acceleration that any New Republic vessel would be hard put to equal. Jaina followed this call with a coded message sent through the New Republic subspace communicator that Lobaka had implanted in the frigate. Target arrived. Let's start the party. It was only then that Trickster's sensors got a full reading on the fleet that had just arrived in the Abroa sky system. Jaina felt the hairs on the back of her neck prickle as she looked at the display. 8 frigates the size of her own. 2 huge transport craft, more coral skippers and picket ships than she could count, and 1 enormous ovoid vessel, glowing in the displays like a burning, unwinking eye. The personal command ship of Supreme Overlord Shimra, Jaina thought. Oh yes, New Republic intelligence was right. Another wave of gravity pulsed over the ship. These were the commands of the Yamask, the Yuuzhan Vong war coordinator that executed the will of the enemy commander. Lobaka allowed Trickster to obey the Yamask's commands to alter course for the enemy. But slowly, as if the frigate were damaged or unable clearly to understand its instructions. The Yamask no doubt verified that the frigate was damaged, a fact that would make its lack of communication with the fleet more convincing. And then, the party started. Dropping out of hyperspace, as if they'd been following Trickster, came the forces of the New Republic. 9 flights of fighters. 4 Corellian gunships. 3 Kuat Systems Republic-class cruisers. A refurbished Lancer-class frigate captured from the Empire during the Rebellion. And 2 MC-80V Mon Calamari cruisers,
both wildly different in appearance, but possessing a world-shattering complement of turbo lasers, ion cannons, and their own 10 squadrons of fighters, all of which now came boiling like swarms of stinging insects from their scalloped hulls. All under the command of General Kian Farlander, the Agamarian hero of the rebellion, and all appearing just behind Jaina, with the Abroa-held gas giant only partially masking their appearance. This, Jaina thought exultantly, is a real battle. And they were following her plan. Hers. More commands came from the Yamask, too many and too complex for Jaina to even attempt to decode. Through the weird perceptions gained through her hood, she saw the enemy fleet deploying, the heavy ships rolling ponderously into position behind darting swarms of coral skippers that flashed like schools of fish against the blackness of space, all moving with a simultaneity and impossible precision gained from coordination with the Yamask's controlling intelligence. But they were doing what Jaina had hoped they would do. The Yuuzhan Vong war psychology was based on attack, on the calculated ferocity of an all-out offensive. Jaina had hoped to trigger that psychology, and she had succeeded. For the moment, there was nothing for her to do but follow the Yamask's orders. She let Force awareness, always on the edge of her perceptions, flood her mind with focused clarity. She felt Lobaka's nearby presence, under the hood that gave him command of the frigate's navigation. Her other lieutenant, Tesser Sebatine, had his efficient predator's mind focused on controlling the frigate's weapon systems. Farther afield, Jaina sensed the grim, reliable Corin Horn, leading Rogue Squadron, and Kip Durin flying at the head of his reformed dozen. Then lastly, Jaina sensed a less familiar presence, the Ankh Jedi, Matarin, who served on the bridge of the Mon Cal cruiser, Mon Adipine, ready to use her force link with the other Jedi to aid the New Republic. Jaina basked for a moment in the pleasure of those she had trained with, served with, those who had shared her triumphs as well as her despair. At Merkur, she had learned the power of the Force Meld that could come when a number of Jedi united their minds and thoughts, becoming stronger than if each stood alone, and for a long moment, she rejoiced in their unity. Distantly, she perceived the orders of the enemy Yamask, saw the Yuuzhan Vong fleet instantly carry them out. She could no longer have complete confidence in the assumption that the Yuuzhan Vong hadn't realized that Trickster was no longer one of their own ships. She had already used the frigate for deception, and it was perfectly possible that they would be wise to her by now. Part of her plan was also based on the use of decoy Dovin Basals that could attach to enemy ships and identify them as enemies to their own side. The most crucial element of the plan were the Yamask jammers developed by Danny Kui. These would override the signals of the Yuuzhan Vong war coordinator, preventing the eerie, single-minded, instantaneous maneuvering that had been the hallmark of enemy victories. Let it all work just one more time. Both fleets were maneuvering now. They were no longer hurtling directly toward one another on opposing tracks. Both had altered course in order to avoid the Abroa-held gas giant and to approach at a far more acute angle that would allow wide fields of fire to the capital ship's broadside guns. And between the fleets, Jaina's frigate, apparently ignored by both sides, fled across the gap, heading toward the presumed safety of the Yuuzhan Vong squadrons. More orders came to Trickster, courtesy of the enemy Yamask.
We're being ordered to take station astern of the enemy flag.
Well, Jaina judged, that's about perfect. Jaina watched the ships move across space, tried to gauge the movement. Now, she sent through the Force. She felt Matarin receive the order, relay it verbally to others on the flagship. On receipt of the signal, a device on one of Wraith Squadron snoop ships began pulsing out gravity waves that interfered directly with the signals of the enemy Yamask. And then, when the enemy war coordinator was no longer able to communicate with the elements of its fleet, the New Republic fleet undertook one more maneuver. Each fleet element altered course to drive directly for the largest enemy ship, Shimra's personal vessel. Jaina sat, trapped in what seemed an eternal moment of suspense, while she waited to see if the jammers worked, if the enemy responded. She could dimly perceive the jammer through her connection to the Dovin bases of Trickster, the rhythm of its transmissions overriding the sendings of the enemy Yamask. And then she felt another rhythm intrude on the first, and saw the enemy ships respond, swinging in a unified response to the New Republic's maneuver, every single ship in the enemy armada altering course at the same instant. No, Jaina thought, horrified. It can't be. The jammer had failed. Or rather, it had worked for only a few moments, producing a hesitation in the enemy countermaneuver. Despair flooded over Jaina. Get out of here, she thought through the force meld. Get away from Obroa Held and into hyperspace now.
No.
Corrin Horn's strong presence flooded Jaina's force awareness. His answer was a powerful cocktail of feelings, impulses, words, and fierce reason. Think. Jaina was frantic beyond thought. Missile tracks began to fly through her displays. Matarin's presence floated into the force meld, alerting the others that Farlander was going to try another maneuver at the last second. Jaina ordered her frigate to scatter weapons as the enemy squadron approached. As if they were shadow bombs, she used the force to shove them toward the Yuuzhan Vong warships, but these weren't shadow bombs, nor would they cause damage to the enemy, at least not directly. Each contained a Dovin basal that, when attached to an enemy vessel and triggered, would identify the ship carrying it as an enemy of the Yuuzhan Vong. The enemy squadron flashed past, several of the decoy Dovin bases attaching to each ship. Jaina held her breath as Farlander squadrons turned and accelerated, an attempt to cross the bows of the oncoming Yuuzhan Vong squadrons, shifting their target back from Shimra's flagship to the enemy fleet elements. And then Jaina's despair deepened as she felt, through her connection with Trickster's Dovin basals, another series of commands raining out from the distant Yamask. The enemy ships all turned, once again, to counter Kian Farlander's maneuver. Jaina's blood ran cold. The Yamask jammer had been countered. Out of pure despair, she triggered the Dovin basal decoy she had fired at the enemy craft. Despite her impulsiveness, the timing was perfect. The decoy switched on just as the enemy craft opened their main attack on the New Republic squadron. All the missiles and bolts that would otherwise have poured into the New Republic ships were fired instead at the two frigates and a few other smaller craft, which in their turn furiously fired at each other. Jaina watched as the elements of the Yuuzhan Vong squadron began maneuvering against each other, with the same uncanny precision they had always shown under the guidance of a Yamask. Yuuzhan Vong pilots and gunners were shrouded by the living hood that fed them information, and they knew only what the hood told them. When it told them a ship was enemy, they fired at it. It worked, Jaina said.
Of course, Lobaka answered.
But why? The question floated to Jaina from Corrin Horn. Think. Something's going on. Fire spattered the flanks of the two enemy frigates as projectiles and missiles struck home. Muffled by her hood, Jaina gave a cheer. Through the force, she could feel Corrin, Kip, and Matarin as they fought together, bringing separate elements of the fleet into a synchronization similar to that granted to the Yuuzhan Vong by their Yamask. But they flew only three ships and led only three elements of the fleet, two of them fighter squadrons. The rest of the New Republic fleet was forced to communicate through more conventional means. Contrary to what intuition might suggest, fighter combat generally grew less deadly, not more, as greater numbers of fighters were involved.
When fights were large and confusing, pilots spent more time watching their tails than hunting the enemy. The brains of the pilots simply couldn't keep track of all the craft maneuvering against them. But that wasn't the case with the Yuuzhan Vong war coordinator. The Yamask kept track of every craft in the sky and ordered those in jeopardy to maneuver while others were guided to rescue their comrades. Jaina's heart lifted when first one, then another enemy frigate blew to bits, both betrayed by the decoy Dovin basals she'd fired at them. But otherwise, the Yuuzhan Vong were doing well. Only Jaina, who had flown unmolested clear through the enemy fleet, was in a position to observe it all and despair. The enemy Yamask gave the Yuuzhan Vong too great an advantage. Think, Jaina echoed Corrin Horn's command. Why was the Yamask working even though it was jammed? Why was the jammer not working while the decoy basals were functioning perfectly, even though they were both based on the same principles? She submerged her awareness into the complex signals, tried to sense the pattern. There were two distinct patterns she found, not one overlaid atop the other. The jammer and the Yamask seemed almost not to have anything to do with each other. What was the problem? And then, beneath the jammer, Jaina began sensing something else. Another pattern. What she detected seemed to be the signals of another Yamask. Two Yamasks? The truth came in a sudden flash. Supreme Overlord Shimra had brought his own war coordinator to the battle, probably on his flagship. But there was a second Yamask in the system, one seated by the invaders on Abroa Sky. The Yamask that New Republic intelligence had known about all along. Twin Sons leader to Wraith leader, there's a second Yamask. You'll have to tune another jammer to it. Face Lauren's tone failed to reveal whatever surprise he might be feeling.
This is Wraith Leader. Message understood, Major.
There was a slight delay before Jaina detected the second jammer begin its hammering beat, and another few seconds before it found the correct signal and began jamming it. Anxiously, Jaina scanned the battle scene laid out behind her. It was working. The eerie synchrony of the enemy ships was breaking up. Momentum was with the New Republic now. They were used to operating with less than perfect communications and coordination. But the Yuuzhan Vong pilots were bewildered once deprived of the commands of the Yamask.
Got one.
Kip's triumph floated through the force.
Get another,
Corrin Horn sent. Had time to send, now that he was no longer so hard-pressed. Jaina could have wept with relief. The tide had definitely turned, and Jaina quietly exulted. My plan. It was working after all.
Jaina.
Lobaka's voice.
Yes?
I thought you'd like to know I've just laid Trickster right astern of the enemy flagship.
And they ordered us to come here, she thought in delight. Right, she said. This time through the comlink that connected her to everyone in her squadron. I want every cannon and projectile tube on that ship's stern targeted, and those fairings too, whatever's in them. Acknowledgements crackled over the comlink, and Jaina busied herself in following her own orders. All weapons ready? Open fire! Trickster's bow blazed as a host of missiles and projectiles sped for the undefended enemy stern. Fire blossomed over the dark silhouette of the enemy ship, patterns of pinpoint flares marking dozens of hits. Jaina made certain that amid the volley were two of her decoy Dovin basal missiles, one primary, one reserve. And as soon as the first volley was over, she triggered the primary, informing every Yuuzhan Vong in the area that their own flagship was now an enemy. This encouraged the 60 nearby coral skippers to do their bit, plunging toward their flagship, fire raking along its flanks. Through her force awareness, She sensed Kip's satisfaction as he nailed a pair of coral spears. Corrin's grim pleasure in leading his flight into the tails of a group of enemy skips, and Matarin's awe as two more enemy frigates were destroyed. The stern of the enemy flagship was glowing now, an eerie orange-red, as repeated impacts broiled the target. Jaina kept firing.
The enemy's breaking off, Twin Leader.
The flagship's voice came over her comm. Good news, Flag.
Not so good for you. They're pulling back to help their leader.
That meant four enemy frigates would soon be engaging her. Better call on the...
Already taken care of, Twin Leader.
Already taken care of. Through her Dovin basals, Jaina felt the surge of gravity waves as two more squadrons of starships entered real space. Two battle dragons, three Nova-class battle cruisers, and accompanying fighters, all courtesy of the Happen Navy, and led in person by Jaina's former classmate, Queen Mother Tenel Ka, ruler of the 63 inhabited planets of the Happy's Consortium. The Happen fleet, like the New Republic ships, had been hovering only a few light hours from Abroa Sky, ready for the call. Jaina watched in awe as the three battlecruisers, acting as one, dashed at the enemy flagship in a single pass, their batteries blazing. Much of the fire got through, and Jaina saw towering explosions and geysers of debris erupt from the enemy hull. At this point, the rest of the Yuuzhan Vong apparently conceded their flagship loss, abandoned the battle, and fled in all directions with allied squadrons in pursuit. Jaina was surprised. She'd assumed they'd defend their supreme commander to the last warrior. The Happen ships blew up the flagship on their next pass. The starfighters began to hunt down the stranded coral skippers. Jaina watched the endgame play itself, her mind ringing with awe. It worked. Her plan. It worked. She had just killed Shimra, supreme overlord of the Yuuzhan Vong. If she hadn't just won the war, she might have provided its decisive moment. A Wookiee howl came over the comlink.
Yes,
Tesser said.
Congratulations.
Cheers and congratulations erupted over the comlink. Jaina's squadron, the comrade she'd led into danger, cheering her success. An unaccustomed joy filled Jaina. Thank you, she babbled. Thank you all. More congratulations came through her force awareness. And then from the flagship.
Stand by. The general's sending a message.
Kian Farlander's voice, when it came over the comm, sounded bemused.
I've just received the subspace communication from intelligence advising me not to make the attack or to break off if I've begun.
Jaina laughed. In the heady triumph of the victory, New Republic intelligence seemed even more behind the times than usual. I don't suppose they mentioned why, Jaina responded.
Well,
Farlander said,
it seems there's a problem. It looks as if Supreme Overlord Shimra wasn't in the flagship after all.
Jason rose gently from the embrace of the Force, like a man rising slowly and reluctantly from the warmth and buoyancy of a mineral spring.
You were successful? Vergere asked.
The strange being's feathery whiskers floated in an alien breeze, a wind heavy with warmth and a thick spore of organics. They had escaped Coruscant in a Yuuzhan Vong coral craft, a vessel with a resinous interior that looked like half-melted ice cream and ventilation that smelled like old socks.
I think I found them, Jason said. I touched my mother. And I know she recognized me. But we were cut off suddenly. I don't know why. And I think I may have reached my uncle, my master, Luke. And I touched my sister, briefly.
He frowned as the harmonious sensation brought by his connection with the Force was disturbed by the unsettling memory. But she was involved in a confrontation, a battle, I think, with the Yuuzhan Vong. I broke the connection before I could turn into a fatal distraction for her. Anxiety for Jaina gnawed at his mind. Maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe I should have stayed with her, tried to send her calm and strength. The diminutive vergère hunkered down, the knobs of her reverse-articulated knees rising strangely behind her. The rise or fall of a civilization can depend on the decision made in a fragment of a second. There are many seconds in a day. How many seconds can you regret? How many choices? Only the bad ones, Jason said. Vergère straightened and approached the coral ship's little control station. We're about to fall out of hyperspace. When we arrive in real space, we'll be near a well-defended world of the New Republic, guarded by fighters very jumpy after the fall of Coruscant. We are in a Yuuzhan Vong vessel, with no means of contacting these trigger-happy defenders, and we have no defenses and no weapons. Jason looked at her. What do you suggest we do? Vergère's feathery crest gave a little flutter. Foolish question. Naturally, we trust the Force. Surrounded by rainbows, the great shadow descended in majesty from the sky. Like the wings of a butterfly just emerged from its cocoon, enormous wings slowly unfolded from the great craft. Rainbow colors pulsed and swam.
The Roy Gong Rat.
The roar came from 10,000 throats. The perfect rectangular formation of warriors, in their Von Doom crab armor, raised their amphistaffs and roared their battle cry as the shadow of the craft passed over them.
Tan Yun For Ganajwa.
10,000 priests in red cloaks emblazoned with the symbol of Yun Yuuzhan crossed their arms in salute and roared the devotion as the vessel's shadow enveloped them.
Fearug. Fearug.
10,000 members of the Shaper class, dressed in stainless white, howled their pride, fear, and obedience as the belly of the great craft passed over them. The great shadow hovered over the massive cradle that had been built for it above the well of the world brain, then slowly, majestically descended. Another great cry roared up from the triumphant multitude as the huge craft settled into its cradle, like a monarch slowly sitting on his throne. Beneath the ship, hidden from view, the living craft and the living cradle joined, linking power and communications and resource systems so that the craft now drew its nourishment from the planet, and the Supreme Overlord was in direct contact with the world brain, the Duryam that controlled the remaking of Yuuzhan Tar, formerly known as Coruscant, capital of both the New and Old Republics. At the moment the shout went up, Gnome Anor began to feel an itching at the base of his toes. He resisted the impulse to bend and scratch, or to scrape one boot over the other. The Yuuzhan Vong did not regard bodily discomfort as significant. Gnome Anor found that it was all he could do to keep his mind on the ceremony, on the ritual steps and obeisances that prepared the way for the appearance of the Supreme Overlord. Shimra's personal quarters arched up above the plaza like a head on the end of a long neck. At the apex was a circular walkway surrounded by a rail that glittered like mother-of-pearl in the artificial rainbows. Standing amid the brilliance was Supreme Overlord Shimra, unquestioned leader of the Yuuzhan Vong, sanctioned by the gods to bring all these new worlds under his heel. Gnome Anor's eye was so dazzled by rainbows that he could see nothing of Shimra but a silhouette,
A giant silhouette, towering over the bent, ungainly figure next to him. Anami, apparently a member of the Shamed Ones, whom the Supreme Overlord had adopted as his familiar.
Yuuzhan Vong, conquerors, blessed of the gods,
Shimra roared.
We have come to the turning point.
Luke found out the next afternoon why Fior Rodan had behaved in such an extraordinary way at their meeting. Rodan hadn't been having a conversation. He'd been rehearsing a speech.
He laid it all out before the Senate this morning, Cal Omas said. His whole program, the Jedi shouldn't be a privileged group within the state. We should stop spending money on Jedi concerns. A new Jedi Council would be a threat.
How was the speech received? Luke asked.
Cal Omas clasped his lanky arms behind his head.
I imagine it went down well with the working stiffs. As for the senators, some agreed, some didn't. Some saw it only in political terms.
Cal Omas's apartment was cramped and underwater. Though built with the usual Mon Calamari attention to elegant design, which made it seem larger than it actually was. A transparent wall looked out into the floodlit inverted cityscape of Herkia Floating City, showing Mon Cals and Quarren swimming past or jetting by in their vehicles.
I made a response to Fior's speech, Cal went on. I said that anyone who had fought alongside the Jedi in the war against Palpatine would never believe that they were a threat to the rest of us, and that it was unfortunate that Rodan lacked the experience. Trebek the Wookiee, who served with both Omas and Rodan on the advisory council, gave a howl of appreciation.
Cal leaned his long body forward in his chair and looked at Luke.
I'd like to reestablish the Jedi Council, but I don't know if it's a good idea to say so.
Suppose, Luke offered, you say that you will bring the Jedi firmly under the control of the government. You don't have to specify how.
I'll have to give some details, Cal said. Luke, can you tell me how the Jedi Council was set up in the past?
The Jedi Council was a dozen or so respected masters, Luke said, who oversaw the other Jedi and their training, and who reported to the Supreme Chancellor. If the Chancellor saw a problem that required Jedi abilities, he would inform the Council, who would send Jedi to deal with it. Usually not many, because it was well known that behind the first Jedi were 10,000 more.
10,000 Jedi, Cal mused, to cover an entire galaxy.
Mara gave a smug smile. We're good, she said. Luke smiled.
I think I've worked out how to reestablish the Jedi Council in a way that will disarm Fior Rodan.
Cal leaned forward.
Tell. I had a nagging feeling when I was listening to Fior Rodan yesterday, Luke began. The nagging feeling I had was that Rodan was right in a way. We are doing the jobs that other people are being paid to do. We are asking the government for privileges, and we're asking a great deal of people to believe that we ask in all humility and mean no harm. Yet all they have to do is remember Darth Vader, and they'll suspect the contrary.
And your solution? Cal looked deeply intrigued.
Suppose the Council isn't composed entirely of Jedi, Luke said. We can have one member from each of the government branches that might feel threatened by us. Say we have a senator chosen by the Senate, someone from the Defense Force, another representative from the Ministry of State, and another from the Justice Council to make certain we stay within the law. Rodan would have a hard time convincing people that all those representatives were Jedi puppets, especially if the Chief of State himself was on the Council as well.
Cal frowned as he considered the matter.
You've just given me quite a list. That's 5 non-Jedi on the Jedi Council.
6,
Luke corrected on second thought. We'd also need someone from the intelligence division.
And how many Jedi? Cal asked.
6 Jedi, Luke said. That will bring the government representatives into balance with the Jedi.
That's giving up a lot of the traditional Jedi power, Cal said.
It's power we've already lost, Luke said. We lost it when the old Jedi fell. Cal's eyes focused, searching Luke's face.
You're sure? You're sure that you're comfortable departing this far from Jedi tradition?
Luke began, and then he felt a touch on his mind, and again he thought, Jason. Jason's presence sang in his head.
I thought I had sent you to your death, Luke said.
Dimly, he was aware of the shock and sudden concern of the others in the room as they reacted to the words he'd spoken out loud, but not to them.
It was Jason, all right. Luke recognized the ingenuousness, the dry earnestness. But Jason wasn't all that Luke sensed. Hovering remotely in the Force, Luke perceived another presence, one who seemed entirely unfamiliar.
Verger. It wasn't a name that floated to him, but a thought, an image, a presence. Luke took a breath at this direct, surprising confirmation. He had never met the alien personally, but he'd been briefed about her, and had also heard from Han about the defection she'd once staged from the Yuuzhan Vong, along with her redefection in the opposite direction. He had every reason to be suspicious of Verger, but on the other hand, Verger, through her tears, had healed Mara of the disease that had threatened her life. What Luke hadn't known was that Verger was strong in the Force. He could feel her power, restrained at the moment, but perfectly genuine. More impressions came from Jason. A Yuuzhan Vong craft, with its organic scent and resinous walls. Alarm. New Republic ships moving in swarms. Luke broke contact and turned to his three friends, all of whom were gazing at him with deep concern.
The short version, he prefaced. Jason Solo just contacted me through the Force. He's in the Mon Cal system in a Yuuzhan Vong escape pod, and we've got to stop the military from blowing him up.
Nome Anor forgot his itch as he filed into the Hall of Confluence behind a superior, High Prefect, Yug Skell. The hall was magnificent, broad at the 4 palpating doors by which high-ranking members of the 4 ruling castes entered, then narrowing as it approached the far end. The room was a trompe l'oeil, designed so that all eyes were drawn toward an artificial vanishing point, at which point was the seat of the Supreme Overlord. At the focus of all eyes was the largest Yuuzhan Vong that Nome Anor had ever seen, a giant even among the most massive warriors. Shimra sat in silence on a blood-red throne of Yorick coral that thrust spines and spikes from its central mass, as if warding an enemy from the Overlord's presence. Crouched at the feet of Shimra was a lanky figure dressed in rags that hung in shreds on his flabby skin, his lip curled back over his teeth to show one yellow fang. His skull was misshapen, with one lobe swollen. Shimra's familiar, Anami. Standing across the room, Nome Anor saw the priest, Harar, with whom he had shared several serious misjudgments. Harar gave no sign of knowing him.
Good, Nome Anor thought. Let all that be forgotten.
The shamed one, Anami, rose to his feet.
Great lords all, he began, whose plans profound have put our feet on solid ground. I hope you will not think it crime if for this day I speak in rhyme.
Anami paused for an answer, mismatched eyes scanning the crowd. As if anyone would object, Shimra's status as Supreme Overlord was unquestioned, and a reflection of his power was that he had actually adopted a shamed one as his familiar, a grotesque, twisted being who had been rejected by the gods.
Enough,
Shimra growled. The Overlord's familiar cringed in apology, then dragged himself back to the throne and dropped like a sack of bones at his master's feet. Shimra's head turned left and right, viewing all the delegates in turn. Then he turned his massive body toward Savang La.
I should like to discuss the prosecution of the war. What do you have to say, War Master?
Savang La's hand formed a fist, which he brought down with a crash on the arm of his chair.
I have but one word to say, and that word is victory!
His delegation growled in agreement.
The enemy capital is ours, and you have taken formal possession of it. We followed the capture of Yuuzhan'tar with our victory at Borlaeus. With the exception of the unfortunate Komkarsh, our forces have been victorious everywhere.
Anami, at the Overlord's feet, gave a little giggle that echoed strangely in the room's cavernous spaces.
The War Master bared his teeth.
Shimra gave a rumble of warning to Anami at his impudence, and then his gaze settled on Savang La.
Anami may spawn wretched doggerel, but he has a point. Your attempts to capture Jaina Solo have been a complete failure.
Having no choice but to acknowledge his defeat, Savang La bowed his head.
I confess it. And the casualties we took for the capture of Yuuzhan'tar were enormous. The first two waves were wiped out, and the third wave, though victorious, was decimated. After that, Borlaeus was a very expensive victory. More, in my judgment, than the planet was worth.
Shimra pointed at Savang La.
You have won your victories by sending your troops over a rampart of our own dead! How do you intend to replace these casualties? My lord, I...
The War Master was at a loss.
I have fulfilled all our primary objectives. I have given you the capital.
We may grow more warships, but warriors must be bred,
Shimra said.
It will take a generation or more before our formations stand again at full strength, and we now have many worlds to defend.
I will give you more victories, Savang La cried. The infidels are routed. If I follow up our victories, they will break.
You ask to follow the enemy. I have read our strength reports. We do not have sufficient forces both to maintain the offensive and to hold what we have already taken. My lord,
Savang La kept his head bowed.
With all respect, we pursue a broken foe.
Shimra's voice was icy.
The enemy that wiped out Komkarsh was hardly broken. And may I remind the War Master that Komkarsh's fleet was our sole strategic reserve. From this point, moving any warrior to strengthen one force will weaken another.
Savang La had no answer. His eyes stayed fixed on the ground.
Our forces will break off offensive operations for the present,
Shimra said.
As the Supreme One wishes.
Savang La's voice was a barely audible hiss.
I wish it.
Shimra's glowing gaze rose from the War Master and swept over the room.
All warriors will now be ordered to breed at the age of 16 if they have not already.
If no mate chooses a given warrior, his or her commander will award a suitable mate from the warriors available.
Shimra turned to Yug-Skell.
Let the High Prefect inform us of the disposition, strength, and intentions of the infidels.
Yug-Skell bowed to the Supreme Overlord and presented a digest of the latest information procured from sources within the New Republic. The enemy government, Yug-Skell reported, had moved to Mon Calamari in the Outer Rim, though it was not clear whether it would remain there. The government had not as yet chosen a new head, though a human named Fior Rodan was a possible candidate. While Yug-Skell made his report, Gnome Anor tried his best to remain rigidly calm. The itch had turned his skin to fire. Desperately, he willed himself to be still. After Yug-Skell's report, there was a moment of silence before Shimra responded.
This Fior Rodan, this Kal Omas, is it known whether they will favor submission or war?
Supreme One, I will defer in this matter to my junior colleague Gnome Anor,
Yug-Skell said.
He is a specialist on the subject of the infidels, having lived among them for many years.
Shimra's baleful rainbow gaze lifted to Gnome Anor, and again, Gnome Anor felt the chill of fear. At least he forgot all about his itch.
Supreme One,
he began, and was thankful he hadn't stammered.
According to the analysis provided by our agent Vicky Shesh, Fior Rodan was a supporter of Borsk Faelia, though he occasionally showed signs of independence. His only consistent position was on the matter of the Jedi, whom he always opposed. As far as we know, he hasn't expressed an opinion on the matter of peace or war. Neither has Kal Omas, who has, however, consistently supported the Jedi. I wish this Kal Omas killed. Have your agents carry out an assassination.
Gnome Anor hesitated.
Few of my agents are in place on Mon Calamari. We...
Shimra's eyes glittered dangerously. Gnome Anor crossed his arms obediently.
It shall be as you desire, Supreme One.
The Supreme Overlord's next question was so soft-spoken that it caught Gnome Anor by surprise.
We shall teach the New Republic the glory of the gods. And what shall we teach the Jedi? More importantly, what have they taught us?
At the mention of the Jedi, fear paralyzed Gnome Anor's tongue. But after a brief internal struggle, he managed to wrench a satisfactory answer from his half-numbed mind.
We shall teach them how to increase the glory of the Yuuzhan Vong through their extermination. And what they have taught us is that their treachery is boundless and must be answered with death and blood.
Gnome Anor felt the Overlord's eyes on him and felt again the presence of Shimra's mind pressing on his own.
And whose fault?
Shimra asked, in a voice all the more ominous for its quiet tone.
Was the fiasco in the well of the world brain?
Gnome Anor fought his way to the surface through a current of blind panic.
My lord, he said. Though I am not blameless, I beg you to remember that I operated under the authority of War Master Savang La.
The War Master stood tall, not deigning to respond.
We all underestimated the treachery of the Jedi, Supreme One,
Gnome Anor said.
We were misled by the creature Vergere. I, no more or less than others.
Shimra fixed Gnome Anor again with his baleful look.
Thousands witnessed this disaster.
One of the Jedi, they were told, had been converted through the embrace of pain to the true path, and would willingly sacrifice one of his peers in the well and offer his death to the gods. And instead, what do they see? The great doors slammed in their faces as our tame Jedi escaped, while the supposed sacrificial victim held off an army with the special Jedi weapon that was supposed to have been taken from him.
The world brain was endangered,
Chigang Hul cried.
This catastrophe has led to heresy,
spoke the priest, Jaqen. Shimra's eyes once again settled on Nomanor.
Heresy, doubt, danger to the Duryam on which all our plans for our new homeworld depend. Proof of the heroism of the Jedi fighting in our own capital before the eyes of thousands. An executor, you will have us believe that this was entirely the workings of one little avian? This Vergere?
Nom Anor's vision began to darken. He felt as if his soul were being squeezed by a ruthless velvet hand.
Supreme One,
he managed.
None of us trusted her completely. All her meetings with the captive Jedi were monitored. Nothing seditious passed between them. She proved her loyalty more than once. She led Jaqen Solo into captivity on 3 separate occasions. When the Jedi was tortured, his physical responses were monitored and truly indicated that he was learning the embrace of pain. He was accepting the pain as if he were Yuuzhan Vong. When he announced his willingness to proclaim the true doctrine and sacrifice the other Jedi who he himself had captured, no one doubted him.
And the importance of the twin sacrifice? Shimra inquired.
The idea that this Jaqen Solo should not be killed immediately, but held until he could be sacrificed along with his sister. Whose notion was that? Vergere's,
Nomanor said. He felt the presence of the Supreme Overlord begin to squeeze his mind again, blotting out his thoughts.
Supreme One,
another voice said. Through the blur of oppression and terror, Nomanor recognized the priest Harar.
I was present, Supreme One,
Harar said.
The idea of the twin sacrifice was partly my own, partly Kalila's, partly Vergere's. I confess that I was duped. The truth is that Vergere fooled us because none of her actions seemed capable of a treacherous interpretation. Why did she lead Jaqen Solo into captivity not once, but thrice? She had numerous opportunities to help him escape, but did not do so. Why did she participate in his torture? Why did she manipulate him, or seem to manipulate him on our behalf? I have concluded, Harar finished, that if Vergere is not loyal to us, neither is she loyal to the infidels.
Nomanor's blood sang with gratitude for Harar. The priest had saved him. The War Master, on the other hand, looked at Nomanor as if he were on the verge of throttling him. While Nomanor struggled to recover his presence of mind, Shimra interrogated Harar and the War Master. In the end, the Supreme Overlord leaned back on his throne, disappearing into its spiky interior.
Interesting. For 50 years, this Vergere has lived among us, and none of us knew her true nature. For 50 years, she studied us and learned our ways, and was able to plan her treachery.
He leaned forward and turned to Jaqen.
Priest, is this creature not the true incarnation of Yunharla, the trickster?
Outrage quivered in the priest's jowls, but when he spoke, his voice was firm.
Never! Say rather that Vergeer is the embodiment of evil.
Is she a Jedi?
Someone queried.
She can't be, Arar said. The Jedi derive their abilities from something called the Force, and their use of it can be detected by a Yamask. If Vergeer were Jedi, she would have been unmasked.
Shimra's deep voice was reflective.
Jedi or not, I wonder about her. Isn't such a deception over such a long period a kind of masterpiece?